5. Bradley Byers, 38, a former Marine F-18 fighter pilot who had flown combat missions in Afghanistan and Iraq, joined Mattis's office as a civilian liaison to the White House. He was part of a so-called beachhead team of 36 Trump appointees at the Pentagon who did not have to be confirmed by the Senate. They were supposed to work in Mattis's suite of offices at the Pentagon and give the White House leverage in Mattis's operation. The first week of the Trump administration, Trump was scheduled to come to the Pentagon on January 27th for a ceremonial swearing-in of Mattis. The president was also in a dead sprint to sign as many executive orders as possible to demonstrate how he was changing government and overturning Obama's legacy. He planned to sign some at the Pentagon. "Brad," Mattis said in the morning, "what executive orders does the president intend to sign?" Byers did not know, but promised to find out. He called and emailed the White House Staff Secretary's office and Cabinet Affairs. The orders for the day were still being edited. There had been no NSC or Cabinet meetings. Eventually, the executive orders were sent by email. Trump was arriving. The orders were printed out and each put in a leather folder. Byers finally looked at the second one, titled "Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States." It was a travel ban preventing people from 7 majority Muslim countries from entering the United States. 6 months earlier, as a civilian, Mattis had publicly criticized candidate Trump's proposed ban on Muslim immigrants. In the Middle East, Mattis had said, "They think we've completely lost it. This kind of thing is causing us great damage right now, and it's sending shockwaves." Mattis was ceremonially sworn in at the Pentagon's Hall of Heroes, which honored more than 3,000 service members who had received the Congressional Medal of Honor, the highest combat award. He thanked Trump and Pence and welcomed them to the headquarters of your military, your always loyal military, where America's awesome determination to defend herself is on full display. Trump, professing total confidence in Mattis, called him a man of total action. He likes action. As the ceremony came to a close, Trump signed the travel ban order and handed it to Mattis. Mattis was stunned. As soon as the news broke, some veterans in the Congressional Medal of Honor Society immediately conveyed their fury that the hall had been used as a staging ground for the controversial travel ban. Their blunt message to Mattis, "That's not what we fought for." Mattis felt it was a gross process error. There was no process. Who was deciding these things? The travel ban, which began as a campaign promise Trump made in December 2015, when he called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on, became a symbol of Trump's anti-immigrant attitudes and policies. On March 19, 2017, The Washington Post ran an article saying that many in the Pentagon privately called Byers the Commissar, a Soviet-era communist official who was supposed to monitor the loyalty of commanders. Mattis saw the article and asked Byers to stick around after the morning meetings. "I suppose you read the article," Mattis said. "If you're going to float around these circles, you better get used to it. They will either figure out the bad stuff about you or they'll make it up." He told some funny stories about times he thought the press got it wrong about him when he was a general. When Byers left the office, a large group was standing outside for another meeting. "Hey, young man," Mattis said loudly so everyone could hear, "you keep your sense of humor, and when all else fails, fuck 'em." "So the White House thinks you're their guy," Mattis later told Byers, "and I've got you." Mattis made it clear he did not want any daylight in public between himself and President Trump on any issue. That way, Mattis could have influence. Any public daylight could be fatal. In early April, Trump ordered a modest response of 59 Tomahawk missiles at Syria's Shayrat Air Base as punishment for Bashar al-Assad's use of chemical weapons. The next morning, Trump phoned Mattis at the Pentagon in what was supposed to be a congratulatory call. Mattis put Trump on the speakerphone, and some of the senior staff gathered around his desk to listen. Trump had seen photos of the damage. "I can't believe you didn't destroy the runway," the president shouted. He was in a rage and seemed beside himself. "Mr. President," Mattis finally responded, "they would rebuild the runway in 24 hours, and it would have little effect on their ability to deploy weapons. We destroyed the capability to deploy weapons for months." That was the mission the president had approved, and they had succeeded. In April, Byers carried a letter from Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross to Mattis about an investigation into steel and aluminum tariffs the president, a strong believer in tariffs, had ordered. The president believed domestic production of steel was in jeopardy because of cheaper foreign imported steel. "Brad," Mattis said after reading the letter, "I've got North Korea, I've got Syria, I've got the Horn of Africa all on fire. I don't give a shit about steel." But he did care about the alliance with South Korea, a major exporter of steel. Any tariff could severely damage the critical relationship. "Deal with it," Mattis said. Mattis sent a memo to the White House reporting that U.S. military steel usage represents 0.5% of the total U.S. steel demand, and the military would be able to acquire the steel necessary to meet national defense requirements. Byers kept Mattis informed weekly, if not daily, about White House tariff discussions. Dealing with it meant that Byers literally took Mattis's place at the cabinet-level meetings. At 10 a.m. on June 26th, Byers sat at Mattis's placard in the Roosevelt Room for the cabinet-level meeting on steel tariffs. Byers took notes. The debate turned on how best to impose tariffs. Byers found the lack of context or definition of the problem rendered the talks aimless. "The president is expecting to come in," said Reince Priebus, the chief of staff. "I'm going to advise him that we're not ready for him." He left for the Oval Office and came back in about 2 minutes. "Against my advice," the chief of staff said, visibly nervous, "the president wants to hear this debate." Soon, Trump walked in and everyone stood. "We're going to put a tariff on all steel and aluminum, on everything coming in," the president said, "and see what happens." This approach drove Gary Cohn, the chief White House economic advisor, crazy. He had argued passionately that the American economy was too important to haphazardly experiment with. The president added that they should not worry about NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which he was trying to renegotiate. Then he shifted to trade deficits, especially with South Korea. "We are a consumer-driven economy," Cohn said, reminding the president of the consequences of imposing tariffs. "And the prices are going to go up, and that's going to have a significant impact on our gross domestic product, overall economic growth." "We need 3% gross domestic product growth," Mick Mulvaney, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, agreed, "or we are out of business." "The world is taking advantage of us," Trump said, batting away their concerns, "and it's time for a change. I would love to leave South Korea." America was being taken advantage of. The United States was paying to keep 30,000 troops in South Korea to protect South Koreans. "We are the piggy bank that everyone wants to rob." Trump was jovial and dropped several F-bombs. "Don't worry about everything." Cohn offered one more argument against steel tariffs. "We're not a steel-producing nation. We're a goods-producing nation. If we increase the price of steel, our goods become overpriced and we can't compete." The internal White House war for and against tariffs continued. Byers was in the Oval Office, seated by the Resolute desk, on July 21st, as Trump signed an executive order to assess how to strengthen the manufacturing and defense industrial base. "You were a wrestler?" Trump asked Byers. "Yes, sir, I was," Byers replied. He had been the captain of the North Carolina wrestling team for 2 years and qualified 3 times for the NCAA championships. Why would you ask? Those ears, the president said. You have wrestling ears. This was classic cauliflower ear, the buildup of fibrous tissue from repeated impacts. Were you any good? Yes, sir, I can hold my own. I bet you were good, Trump said. You know what? I would have been a great wrestler. I never wrestled in my life, but I would have been a great wrestler. You know why? No, sir, why? Because I'm tough, Trump said, and you've got to be tough to be a wrestler. Trump had hosted several pro wrestling events and even participated in a Battle of the Billionaires in 2007. He was inducted into the World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame in 2013. Trump signed the executive order and they all posed for a picture. The group included White House trade advisor Peter Navarro. Peter, Trump said, I need you to take charge of negotiations on steel. Trump said that U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross were weak negotiators and that Navarro needed to be tough, hard line. Trump added, not to mention my fucking generals are a bunch of pussies. They care more about their alliances than they do about trade deals. Navarro appeared to be flattered by Trump's remark and said he would be happy to take over the negotiations. Once Byers returned to the Pentagon, he asked Mattis for a private meeting. They met alone the next day. What's on your mind? Mattis asked. There was an interchange in the Oval Office involving the president that I should tell you about, and it's very uncomfortable, Byers said. Brad, don't you worry at all, Mattis said. Just tell me what happened. Byers explained the president had mentioned that generals weren't tough enough on steel and aluminum tariffs and were more worried about alliances. Tell me exactly what he said. The president said, Byers recounted, my fucking generals are a bunch of pussies. They care more about their alliances than they do about trade deals. Byers could see the secretary's mind racing to assess the situation. For the president to speak that way in front of a subordinate like Byers and others was a gross violation of a basic leadership 101 principle. Praise in public, criticize in private. Brad, Mattis said, I really appreciate your telling me that. Would you mind putting that in an email for me? Byers followed Mattis's order and wrote an email to document what had occurred.